Under the Helmet.
You do your thing, all right? Don't be nervous, okay?
The show that looks at long-term player value in fantasy football.
It's the moment right here. We're going to have to decide what type of team we want to be.
Building dynasties each and every week.
I don't even know your name. What's your name?
Chad Parsons.
I'm telling you, man, you're leading the league in hydration.
I got a dynasty team reaping rewards for the next decade.
Katie Flower.
You may beat me, but you will not outwork me.
Tim Torch.
There's only one winner, Chad.
Find their written and premium audio content at uthdynasty.com.
Playing it safe in Dynasty means you're going to lose.
Stop talking about it, man. Let's get this going right now.
Welcome to Under the Helmet, official show of uthdynasty.com. We've got Katie Flower here. I am Chad Parsons. And we've got a Julio Jones to Tennessee trade to discuss. We've got a few Dynasty trades. And we're going to talk because June, July, perfect time for a startup draft. And you may be looking into little Devy League, you know, maybe a different type of Devy League than you've played before, or maybe you're just diving into the format. So we're going to go through a few broad strokes, some strategy points, just generally speaking for those formats. As again, tis the season, and we've got a little span of time here, 4 or 6 weeks, where we're not going to get a ton occurring before the NFL fully ramps back up, outside of maybe something going on with Aaron Rodgers, maybe a few players smattering here and there, but largely the biggest news is going to come late July and in August in terms of shifting the landscape yet again. Do want to mention that if you like this show, you want to get 250 plus premium shows, dive into specific topics on a very, very detailed level. You can find those over at uthdynasty.com as a general manager subscriber. And Katie, we've got Julio Jones, and this was expected. Julio Jones not being in Atlanta was the expectation. Didn't quite know. I know Tennessee was one of the favorites there, but now that it's actually occurred, what are some of your thoughts there as Julio being a bridge player that potentially could be a higher impact guy, you know, over the next 1 to 2 seasons? We'll see what happens beyond there. He's already been in load management kind of partition of his career to date. AJ Brown being one of those pieces that he's joining there in Tennessee. A lot of discussion I've seen is going to center around, is Tennessee going to pass the ball a little more? Do they feel they need to pass the ball a little more? And then with Atlanta, sans Julio Jones, we've already had some greater amount of time assuming that he's not going to be on the roster at Delt sometime in June, but just Julio Jones not being in Atlanta as the other moving piece here.
Yeah, so the one thing that I don't like about the Julio to the Titans is one of my under the radar super flex steals is Ryan Tannehill, and he is now not going to be flying under the radar anymore. He's underappreciated. His ADP has him just behind Baker Mayfield at QB 17. And in the last 3 years without Julio, just at Tennessee, the last 3 years, Tannehill has put up 18 top 12 weeks. And again, I don't look at the overall season. I don't care how you finish as QB whatever on the season. How many top 12 or top 5 weeks have you won? He's been, you know, right there, top 12, top 15 in that capacity. So I just, it's great that he's got another weapon, but I think he's going to be less of a sleeper. If you're doing a startup draft now, he's probably going to go off the board a full round, if not earlier, I would guess, than what he had been going just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think Tannehill was and still maybe a little bit. I mean, UTH was higher on him than the ADP, as you were referencing, in that, you know, 17, 18, 19 kind of zone at the quarterback position. But, you know, he's going to creep closer and closer to, you know, probably, you know, 15, 16, 14, somewhere in that zone where, you know, that's where it starts to get really competitive. You know, you start getting close to 10, 12, somewhere in there. And Tannehill could certainly hang, but you would expect that the volume is going to be one of the big concerns. He's been highly efficient. He still adds that mobility factor in his early 30s. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, because we're not going to debate the skill level of AJ Brown, but there was a lot of discussion that this year, with you look at what without Julio Jones, I mean, Anthony Firkser, big projection on what he's going to maybe provide as the starting tight end. Do they add a tight end? We'll see about that. But, and then you have Josh Reynolds, who emerged from the Rams to potentially have the number two role. They drafted Des Fitzpatrick. The point is lesser than Corey Davis previously. So it was basically in the passing game, AJ Brown, and let's see what we got. Let's throw it into the air and what part of the confetti is going to hit us. And a lot of the talk was AJ Brown could lead the NFL in targets. AJ Brown could see 175, 200 targets. And he's been a high efficiency player on low volume through 2 years. So were you in that camp of saying AJ Brown, outside of just his usage, his situation here, could have been great, and now with Julio Jones, the volume is just, the ceiling potential is not quite so high, or is this going to be no effect on him for this year?
I think AJ Brown will be the wide receiver one. Whatever that volume ends up being, he's still a top fantasy young wide receiver and a great dynasty asset. I haven't seen anybody scrambling to sell him since the aftermath of this. And, you know, let's face it, Julio Jones is 33 years old. It's not like it's a long-term blip. And cream rises to the top. AJ Brown's going to get his targets. He's going to get his share.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's going to change any career arcs or things like that. I do think it probably makes wide receiver one overall a little more difficult just because Julio Jones, I think Julio Jones is going to see more than the 90, 95 targets. Now, that's pending health. So Julio Jones is in his 30s. He's coming off an injury season. He's already one that we've seen managed in that regard, you know, maybe playing a little more on obvious passing downs, things like that in his Atlanta time. Shifting over to Atlanta, do you think, you know, a couple of thoughts that I had about Atlanta, one of them being that it might make Hayden Hurst a little more viable for now. I do think in 2022, Hayden Hurst isn't going to be on the team, but a little more, you kind of look at Atlanta's wide receiver core, more two tight end sets, you know, seems like it's in the offing when you look at who are the best 3 to 4 players to be on the field for Atlanta in the passing game. It's Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, and Hayden Hurst and Russell Gage. I think that's the clear best four, along with a running back in a lot of occasions. But because it gets pretty dicey, and they were already thin beyond Russell Gage at wide receiver. It's a bunch of nomadic guys. So we'll see. But I think a couple takeaways I had. One, Russell Gage is going to be in that top 40 to 50 PPR mix. I think he was last year with Julio Jones playing a partial season. Atlanta's defense isn't very good. I also think Calvin Ridley, his ceiling goes up because he's going to get an entire year. Unless Atlanta goes in the tank and they're not good offensively, which I don't think is super likely. But I think it kind of clears everything up for all these potential, a little more upside. Kyle Pitts getting a few more targets during his rookie season, which a lot of people are already lauding that it's going to be awesome. He's going to be a top 6, top 8 guy as a rookie, which is a really high bar for a tight end. So be careful with that. But it's only going to make his proclamation for this year even hotter for the folks that thought he was going to get off to a strong career start.
Yeah. Again, there's still an opportunity. There's guys like Golden Tate and Alshon Jeffrey. There's some free agents out there wide receiver wise that might be inexpensive rentals. I don't know what their salary cap situation looks like, but it's got to be better now. You don't know. And yes, if everything were to stay exactly the way that it is right now, heading into the season, then everybody you mentioned is the beneficiary. Hayden Hurst would probably be the most likely. I love Mike Davis as a very, not just solid running back, but the receiver. So overall, I don't know that it's going to make Calvin Ridley wide receiver one like everybody I see on Twitter shouting and touting, but let them have their day.
Well, as we know, sharpshooting running back one or wide receiver one or tight end one, QB one is tough. I would say that Calvin Ridley is someone with a chance, a chip and a chair. There's plenty of wide receivers that really don't have a lot of create this story on how they get there. He definitely does have one without an injury around him or anything like that, attached to a good quarterback. And again, you could say maybe his strongest competition is, from my best case scenario, is probably Kyle Pitts, you know, in terms of if something out of the side of the range, I mean, you know, Russell Gage seeing 150 targets would be pretty surprising. I know he saw 110 or so last year, but yeah. And Hayden Hurst, I will just point out, especially for folks in two tight end leagues, that he's one that, again, I don't think he's going to be there next offseason. He's going to move on, probably have a lead job somewhere, and he could still be inside that top 24 kind of viability for this year. I know he was a mid-ish tight end two last year without Kyle Pitts, but you add him, you subtract Julio Jones, and again, I think it could be net similar for Hayden Hurst. So if he's one that, oh, Pitts took all the air out of it, and a lot of people aren't thinking how a wide receiver could impact a tight end in this regard, he would be one that I would at least explore as a profile of saying, I got a guy now that can provide depth, even if he's not a high impact starter guy. And then I think the situation changes next year for him specifically, and things could get a little better, and he could still end up having, you know, a couple of top 10, top 12 seasons, depending where he goes. So he's one of those pedigree bets that it might look really cloudy right now, but I think he'll probably be a little deceptively useful from a floor, and sort of, you know, if he's your tight end three or something in a two tight end league, I think there's some utility now as opposed to, you know, well, in addition to upside later. So is there anything we kind of mentioned right before the show? So Gus Edwards re-signing, extending for a couple years, and J.K. Dobbins, he is projected as a big breakout guy. What are your thoughts generally about Baltimore and all the work they've done over the last 2 to 3 years at wide receiver specifically? I mean, I think they have four guys that were drafted in the first three rounds over those years. They also have Tylan Wallace, who went earlier on day three with a good profile. They are saying, Lamar Jackson, we are going to help you. All along the way, they did it. They double dipped again this offseason in the draft, and they brought in Sammy Watkins. We'll see what he can provide, but they have continually added in a wide receiver centric and moving away from tight end over the last couple of years. Do you think we see a different Baltimore offense? Is this actually leading to somewhere where they're not going to be the complete run centric? We're going to try to win that way always and forever. Are they actually going to open it up a little more from what we see in the regular season, as really it's been postseason that's been the problem?
Unless Lamar Jackson has been upgrading his own throwing accuracy, they're a running team. It doesn't matter how many weapons you put around somebody. If you can't hit that weapon, it's just not going to help. It's not going to matter. Gus Edwards signing is just he's a great backup running back.
Is he a backup?
I like him. What?
Is he a backup? Is he flex viable standalone without regardless of what happens with Dobbins? Do they have enough volume?
Possibly. It's way too soon to call that. I don't know until we see how the season begins, but he may turn into, by midseason, flex viable.
Okay. Do you have some receiving usage questions with Dobbins? Like big picture? Well, like, you know, I mean, I think he's fully capable skill-wise. I mean, I think he could catch 75, 100 balls if you put him in the right offense. I mean, I think he's skill-wise, but I don't ever foresee this with Lamar Jackson. Like, I don't think you're ever going to get a high, strong PPR usage for a running back.
No, I agree with you. I think he is capable as a receiver. It's all going to break down to Lamar Jackson.
Okay. And you're skeptical.
Well, it's much easier to hit a shorter pass or a swing pass or, you know, some kind of something than it is to hit intermediate to deep balls.
He just hasn't been throwing them. That's the problem. I mean, if they saw they were dead last in the NFL and like 50 running back targets a year ago. It's tough.
And again, I don't see that changing a lot.
Yeah. Well, what they're saying is wide receiver, right? They're saying we need help at wide receiver. That could be damning for Marquise Brown. It could be, hey, you know, we just need more. We don't like our 1 through 4. We need to address all of that. Let's bring in Rashad Bateman. And basically our wide receiver one so far has been Mark Andrews. So I think they're one of the more fascinating ones to watch. Because they've typically had about three in rotation. Is that going to include Justice Hill at running back? I do want to see, you know, who stands out. Is Rashad Bateman going to come in? And I think he's capable of being an early impact guy, like ready to go, lock and load. He's been productive every single year and going back to freshman season at Minnesota. So, and that was with Tyler Johnson there. And I remember it was all, you know, Tyler Johnson was a big Devy thing, and it turned into Rashad Bateman, you know, at the later stages of Tyler Johnson's career. And we saw Tyler Johnson go day three. So we obviously know the NFL's answer on who they think is better coming into the league. But yeah, I think Baltimore, and you know, we saw 35 or so touchdowns out of Lamar Jackson, but are they going to become a little more balanced? Is it still going to be run centric? Because if they're run centric, I mean, I think Edwards and Dobbins could both see, you know, 200 plus carries. And that would be a good increase for Edwards. Obviously, you would get Dobbins. I question without the passing. I mean, is he going to score 15 plus touchdowns? Because that's kind of in the Derrick Henry way. I mean, if you don't catch a bunch of passes, that's kind of what you need to be a high running back one. So let's talk about a couple trades here. One of them, a couple trades. One of them is Josh Jacobs. It seems Jordan and I are very much in the, I mean, this is a first round running back. Kenyon Drake is pushing his value down even more. He's got a couple strong finishes to open his career. Is Jacobs a type that you generally, is he a hold player? Is he one that you've actively pursued and gotten a few extra shares this off season? And then we'll kind of get to the trade and some of these tactics here where your action plan may lead to examples.
I haven't tried to acquire him. I haven't seen many trades in the leagues that I'm in with him, but I also have not been actively shopping him. I know that his offensive line isn't going to be as good. I'm not worried about that. He's a hold for me.
Yeah, it definitely feels like
his ADP is right now around RB20.
Yeah.
Which
and you really can't go lower, right?
Right, and it's still falling.
Yeah, I mean, because you get out to the mid-20s of running back and you are clearly shifting from guys who are projected starters, high workload, you know, not big questions. I mean, you might have an age question. You might have, I don't know what the upside is here question, but you start venturing into backups, you know, by that point, or a lack of clarity on some of these rosters like Buffalo, for example, and you're venturing into the, like, we don't know how this is going to really shake out and who is the starter and by how much. So this was a deal that, and again, we're in a room now. We're in a safe space about AJ Dillon being a guy that, you know, we think can carry a load, be a high impact guy in the perfect storm. They did bring back Aaron Jones, but this is Josh Jacobs being sold for AJ Dillon a second and 2/3 in the FFPC format, where roster spots matter, and to me, like, you need, like, this needs to be AJ Dillon in a first to even have a conversation, in my opinion. And this is coming from, I might be the biggest person on AJ Dillon. I might be as big on AJ Dillon as his thighs. Like, I may be that big on him as a dynasty asset, where a lot of people are like, oh, he was, you know, he was going fourth, fifth round of startup drafts when Aaron Jones was projected not to be back, you know, and he was already floating out there in the marketplace. They bring him back and everyone's thinking, you know, like, oh, all these people that rubbed that pick on your face, you know, in the startup draft back in March, I believe. So again, I'm still bullish that says AJ Dillon can be lineup viable even with Jones healthy. That he can be a cornerstone player. If Jones gets hurt, he can change your season and win you seasons. So I'm coming from this and saying that you have to get AJ Dillon in a first, and that's if you love Dillon and you're skeptical of Jacobs. Because otherwise, I mean, this is really low, and Jacobs, you can't get cute like this. Can't get cute.
No, I agree 100%. Especially in that format where you need studs, you can't roster a bunch of what ifs
and seconds and thirds. Frankly, they don't matter that much.
Seconds and thirds are nothing at that point.
Yeah. And again, so Dylan's a guy I would explore. I actually have seen late seconds or thirds alone. You know, if you get the right, I don't like this, he's a backup running back and I don't value backup running backs much, that can be the price point. Much in the line of Alexander Mattison, for example, or, you know, just a little more expensive than Gus Edwards, who probably goes for like a third. So that price point for the best or the highest upside backup running backs is very appealing. So I just wanted to mention that. And Jacobs, if you have him, you got to just hold, because I think Drake is going to siphon, you know, consolidate a lot of the Devontae Booker and, you know, former, you know, running back 2, 3, 4s on that depth chart. He can still have a pretty nice stat line of like 700-800 yards, even if he doesn't touch Jacobs's usage and production from a year ago. So I think there's plenty there with both running backs kind of getting theirs. in that regard. And it'll be interesting to see with Drake if he gets more receiving work, where the Cardinals almost used him in a Josh Jacobs way of like, yeah, he's a receiving guy and you're really using him only as like some downhill thumper, which I found pretty interesting with Chase Edmonds there.
Yeah.
So let's transition to Devy a little bit. And I had one trade that I recently made and talked to you about, and this will transition to Devy, because I think the fascinating marketplace is about trading Devy players or picks. And Katie and I talk about that all the time when we do our own interrogation shows, where, you know, they're an asset. They're an addition, just like rookie picks, Devy players are additional ways to cultivate trades. I traded in one of my leagues, Rakeem Jarrett, who is, he finished his freshman year out of Maryland. He did have a breakout season at I think it was actually 19 years old. He's a little older for a freshman there at Maryland. And I gave a mid-round Devy pick. It actually ended up being a guy we've discussed between us quite a bit, which is Darnell Washington. And that this was before Eric Gilbert, I believe, showed up in Georgia. And it's a two tight end league as well. But trading those two players/picks for Juju Smith-Schuster, who, like Josh Jacobs, he has sort of a stink around him. And, you know, he's back in Pittsburgh, boo, you know, everyone hates that. But again, he was lineup viable a year ago. You put him as your wide receiver 3-4. And again, you can still be pretty happy with that. And he's a free agent again. Let's recycle this. Let's roll it back to 2022. And he just maybe didn't like the options. He wants to roll it back and maybe, you know, try to win with the Steelers. That's all he's been, you know, in his career. So he's a little bit of an interesting cat, you know, and I would say in a good way. So let's see what happens there. And obviously for this year, I think it stunts him. But talk about just in general, the idea of trading, you know, Devy players away, picks, because this is something that I used to never do 3-4 years ago. It'd be like, I want every Devy player on my roster and I'm imagining them 10 years from now in my lineups and great NFL players. But one thing that you've taught me, Katie, and we've discussed quite a bit and we've done in some of our leagues together, is the idea of trading the Devy players, trading the Devy picks, especially when you're a good team. I mean, I think it helps rebuilders when you get a bunch of Devy players and you kind of reset the clock and you get a bunch of chances at early first round pick potential. But the idea of, hey, how about you go for good NFL profile when you have that option, especially when you have guys that are multi-years out and things like that on the Devy front with trading.
One of the nice things about having a deep enough taxi squad to have so many assets is that you can, when that opportunity arises, pounce on a deal like this. Rakeem Jarrett may end up fine. I don't think he's going to be a stud. I think he's going to be a good NFL wide receiver. Will he get round one, round two capital? That's the big question mark. Maybe. That's still a big, long time away from happening. And Darnell Washington, I think, is a little bit overrated, especially at Georgia. But you're getting a solid NFL player, solid NFL profile. Sometimes when you're rebuilding in Devy, you need to take those two or three for one shot. But especially one of my biggest rules in Devy when it comes to trading Devy players for NFL players, for the most part, even if you're rebuilding, if you can get some kind of NFL piece yourself, and then, you know, those couple of Devy. So if they would have gotten, I don't know, Curtis Samuel plus those two Devy, right, that would be a better chance for them to recoup what they traded away, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And like you said, even if you're rebuilding and you want to center it around college players, you can still get, I mean, what if it was Jalen Reagor, for example, you know, getting someone young that is still on the upside curve, but someone already in the NFL. Because one thing, and, you know, we talked about this trade before really going into it. I know this audience is generally knows what Devy is, but let's just bat back and forth a couple bullet points that, so Devy stands for, I think it stands for developmental, which means developmental prospects. So the concept here is, so in your typical dynasty league, you're drafting, you know, you have an annual rookie draft It's rookies. Sometimes it's rookie only. Sometimes it's rookie and veteran. But that's your influx of new players in addition to the waiver wire and whoever may percolate up from that regard. But now you're opening it up, and generally Devy leagues are any college player, including incoming freshmen that technically, you know, they might not even be on campus yet. But they are available for you to draft. That's an 18, 17-year-old freshman, could be a redshirt senior, a sixth-year player. That whole landscape of college is open. And that's not just D1. It could be any player. And a lot of times they even put the prism on, you know, a college player that, you know, could be, we've had some situations where a guy like, you know, Justin Ross, you're not really sure, is he going to continue playing football? You have some scenarios sometimes where a player may be in and out of eligibility or things like that, but just any college player. So it could be a Devy only draft in addition to a rookie only draft. I personally like the ones that are combo, so you can draft rookie or Devy with the picks. This could correspond, or doesn't have to, with IDP. So you have a number of different facets, but that's the roadmap of what it is. You're basically adding college players, which in, except for FanTrax, I believe, every other format, you basically do it, and Katie can get into this a little bit, but that you have to do basically write-ins, and you have to track the Devy on your own. FanTrax actually enables you to play college fantasy football, which means they're going to track scoring if you do want to play the college side of it. Campus to Canton is a very popular format where that team becomes your NFL team, you know, when the players graduate or declare, but they were scoring for you in your college lineup. And then you go forward and they're part of your NFL lineup potentially after that too.
Yeah. Straight Devy does not include any college scoring. They just go on your taxi squad or sometimes on your active roster, depending on the league and how many Devy players that you can have. But MFL has placeholders. They have up to 200 placeholders where you can create custom names. So you put in the first and last name of the player, their position, their school, and that way they're on somebody's roster. You can see it. They have a little asterisk next to them, so you know that they're a Devy player. Makes it easier to trade because then you don't have to track them on a separate sheet. Like some people will do it on a Google Doc, but you don't have to in MFL, which is nice. And I agree with you. I like the leagues better where it's a combined Devy rookie draft every year. That helps retain the value, makes the picks easier to trade and assess the value of the picks because it could be a rookie or it could be a Devy at any one of the picks in the four rounds or however many rounds that you're doing.
Yeah, and I found that trading in Devy leagues, because you have a different asset class, you have an additional one. You have the picks, of course, like you would with any dynasty league, but you also, in addition to NFL veterans or waiver dollars or whatever, but now you have this whole subsection of a few Devy players, maybe a lot of Devy players that fluctuate in value, just like NFL players with the news of the offseason, if they end up transferring, new incoming freshmen to the depth chart, poor play during the college season, you're going to get a changing value landscape. When they get to the NFL draft process, and they wouldn't even be drafted by a majority of dynasty leagues and other, you know, other formats yet, they're already owned, you know, but yet you can manipulate that. So I find, especially if you're dealing with if you're a contender and you're dealing with a rebuilder or vice versa, the Devy players, and Katie mentioned that, you know, when we were talking about that Juju Smith-Schuster trade, very similar in that you might get teams that, you know, they're spilling over to the active squad. You know, normally it'd be a taxi squad, but they're rebuilding, so they don't really care too much. They're in a probably multi-year before being competitive type environment, but those Devy players really help, and they can be at a discount compared to in their pie in the sky best case scenario could become. And so I would encourage anybody. So if you haven't tried Devy, there are really easy access points to do that. And what it does is it's going to enhance your probably enjoyment level of college. You're going to have a little bit invested. When something happens on Saturday, you'll be like, oh, you know, that player is owned or not owned in my Devy league. Even if you don't have a lot of them, it could be, again, I've said before, my first Devy league ever was one per team. You get one Devy rights in your 4 or 5 round annual draft. So every team can draft one Devy player. And it started, I remember when I first got into that league, it was just guys eligible the following year. So you literally were looking at, you know, the previous season, sophomores or juniors that were available outside of, were in that league. And so that was really, again, I mean, Duplo blocks, you know, in the relative scheme of things. It's like you're kind of looking at next year's draft class and you're taking one guy. Or some people would trade their Devy rights. Oh, now you can draft two. I'm drafting zero. I'll just draft rookies. So that is like the lowest entry point. There's also, you know, you could have, you know, 20 or 30 for the whole league. So you could draft zero. It's your option. You could draft two or three or however long they last with the picks in the annual draft. Those are pretty much the most shallow that I'm familiar with. But again, the one per team or two per team, or, you know, if you want to have a league-wide limit, I will say it's relatively low stakes. It's going to get you in there thinking about college a little bit. You don't have to know 200 players. Let's face it. If you have 10, 20, 30, you're only really going to consider probably 40 or 50 total for even 30 owned throughout, you know, the general consensus of the league. There's not going to be a huge variety of the top 10, 15, 20 Devy players. Is that pretty accurate, Katie? Like the subset that most owners would be considering at that depth is not going to vary super, super greatly.
Exactly. But I do want to make sure and point out, and I would be remiss if I didn't, as much as I love Devy, there is a lot of risk involved. And here's an example of, I took over an orphan in a Devy league, and it was very shallow Devy. I think it was either one or two per team per season. And this was a few months away from the NFL draft. And Malachi Dupree was a big name out of LSU. He was a big name wide receiver, but I did not have a lot of faith in him. I really didn't like his profile. I didn't like his film. And the first thing I did was go shopping. And the guy that had Saquon Barkley on his roster traded me straight up. Saquon, I got Saquon, and he got Malachi Dupree. And we all know what happened. Malachi Dupree didn't get drafted till really late and never amounted to anything. And Saquon Barkley was a top running back. That can happen. If you do that multiple times, you can feel snake bit. The biggest thing is don't give up. Trades can be, even drafting. You can draft some guys that never hit. And you just do your best to look at the profiles.
The variance is a lot higher. It's kind of what you're... I mean, because you can draft, and it's less likely, you know, the James Robinson effect of like, oh, 405 in my rookie draft or undrafted in my rookie draft or Philip Lindsay, you know what I mean? Like coming all the way to being like, oh, in their rookie year, they're in my lineup. Like that can happen rookie draft wise, but it doesn't happen a ton. Devy, you can get guys, you know, even when 50, 100, 200 are owned in your league. And guys, we talk about it every year that they slip through the cracks and all of a sudden they would be first round rookie picks. And yet they went through unscathed, you know, in your annual draft a year ago or for three straight years. So the variance, and like you mentioned, I mean, someone can be highly touted. I remember Seth Williams, right? Seth Williams, did he go undrafted or was he like round seven or something? I can't remember. But the point is, a lot of people thought, oh, he's going to be a first round guy, you know, day two at a minimum. And there's a big variance on a guy that can be proclaimed for one, two, 3 years in a row. And then they get to the NFL time and it falls through the floor. You mentioned Malachi Dupree being another one of those big names, if you will, that didn't work out. We'll see about Seth Williams. But so far, because that checkpoint you get with the NFL draft is they turn into rookies. Devy is basically the investment, in my opinion, until they get to the NFL draft. Once they hit the NFL draft, you almost look at them in a profile way of, well, they're at the NFL now. And even during the draft process, they're still Devy. You know, we still have a lot of moving pieces. All of a sudden they go 50 in the draft or 10 or 200. Now we kind of know, you know, even redraft folks are sort of valuing rookies for the coming year and over the next few years or et cetera. So what are some of the pros and cons? If folks are thinking about joining a Devy league, what are some of the pros and cons of, even if it's just one league and you join shallow, deep, something in the middle, what's some of that spectrum for you?
I don't know what the cons are, but I mean, are you talking about the different, which depth would be the
most optimal? Well, I can think of one con and then I'll pass it to you. One con would be, okay, I don't like to analyze rookies until at least the NFL combine or the NFL draft. Cause you know what? All my drafts are in May and June. So I don't make my own rankings. You know, I dabble a little bit. I kind of pay attention. I listen to some podcasts about rookies, but until May or June, I really don't need to know. And this makes it so to some degree, hey, I don't watch college football. It's a whole leap in terms. It's like IDP, right? If you're not in IDP, you're not going to pretty much cover or analyze or look up fantasy stuff on IDP ever. So this will open that up. So if you are very much efficient with your time and you're like, hey, I'm in five dynasty leagues and I like what I do. I'm in my own little bubble here of what I currently do annually and all this. I don't really want to add a whole new subset of assets, players, even if it's just, like I mentioned, you know, 10, 20 in a league-wide, because you might be like, well, Devier added, but I don't want to deal with that. And some people don't like it. What I find interesting is some people that play Devier, they go in there and you rarely ever see them own a Devier player. So that's another concept. I mean, they could just use those picks as capital or say, I'm going to get a better deal on rookies because I'm not drafting Devier, you know, or whatever you. So that's one negative. It's just you don't want to maybe add, even if it's just a little bit of extra analysis on your part or receiving information. College isn't your thing. You pretty much don't follow the NFL draft until, you know, March through May, which isn't really a big subset of the listenership. But if that is you, then again, it may not be something for you to try because you may not like it.
True. But as you mentioned, you can be in a Devier league and never even ever pick a Devier player. You can use those picks to trade for assets that you are familiar with. So you can gain an advantage. Half the league loves Devier picks and the other half loves either rookies or the NFL veterans. Then that's a pretty good mix. As far as pros, Devier is so addicting. It's so much fun. But what I like is that you can get a hold of a guy 2-3 years before most of your league mates have ever heard of them and keep them on your taxi squad until they're like money in a bank, in a 401k. And they just accrue and accrue and accrue. Now, you're not going to hit on everyone. The hit rate at each position is very different, but if you're playing super flex or tight end premium, there's different strategies involved. I love the strategy of fantasy football. So for me, Devier makes a lot of sense. And building out your portfolio, if you've got a taxi squad for Devier, volume is king. If you've got a taxi squad that's 10, max it out in year one, however that looks, whatever that takes. If you've got a taxi squad of 20, max it out. When you make trades, make sure you always get that one extra pick, no matter what, even if it's an 8th round pick. If that can be a Devier player, you can hit from anywhere. Steph Curry, you can hit from anywhere. And by getting that extra player, it could be a Jerry Jeudy. It could end up being somebody that before they're known, and then the very next year they rise up, and you don't even have to keep them on your team the entire time. You could use them as a trade while they're still in college. So while there's a lot of risk, there's a lot of reward, and to me, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can start small. Again, I did, but I also say I've had plenty of subscribers that they just go all in and they use it as a learning process. It doesn't have to be high stakes. It could be low stakes. I mean, it could be a $25 to $50 entry fee, which is, you know, relatively low stakes in dynasty world and for fantasy in general. And you're going to learn so much and just diving in and figuring it out. And like Katie said, it's just going to be a lot of fun where all of a sudden now you're jumping in. It's this entire, I'm not going to say you get bored with Dynasty per se, but what I will say is I've been playing Devier a while and, you know, it's rare that I join a league that isn't Devier now because it's just what I prefer. And it's kind of like, you know, you put in the time sort of, and I reference IDP, for example, that if you put in the time for a new type of format with new players involved, if you're in just one of those leagues, you're not really optimizing. It's kind of like you play redraft and you're in one dynasty league. Well, the analysis and the evaluation, player value and stuff you're doing for one of a certain format. Like if you're only in one super flex league, I mean, kind of the work of what the player value is, you're kind of losing the efficiency of it because it's not too much more work to be in five of them, in my opinion. You know, so that's what I would say is that if you're in one Devy league, if you like it, you're probably going to want to be in more of them is what I would say, because you're already evaluating college players from the Devy player value lens. And so now you want to utilize that in more than just the one league. It's kind of like starting fantasy, right? You're just, I'm evaluating players. And so being in just one, you can put your heart and soul into it, but the added cost or the added mental energy and expenditure for a second league, a third league, a fourth league is not a lot because you're dealing with the same thought process to go through building teams and making moves. Yeah. And I would say it's definitely made me sharper and someone that I already really dug into the rookie draft process, but when you can more closely, even if it's just, you know, an additional 5, 10, 20 players in each draft class, the fact that you're going to have a longer, because some people, let's face it, you get to January, okay, who's in this year's draft class? And you're getting to the point of you're kind of rolling back. Well, let me see. You know, I kind of remember this past year. I remember watching some Alabama games. But when you own them or considered them and looked at them as Devy players for 1, 2, 3 years before they even got to the draft process, all of a sudden now you have a much richer understanding of their career as a whole. You remember them when they were out by injury. You don't have to like look back 3 years and be like, oh yeah, it looks like they were a little productive as a freshman, but how good was that? No, you remember because you considered them. Should I draft them? Maybe you have them in Devy leagues, incoming freshman, second year. And that's going to be my final point. And I'll throw it to you, Katie. It's just the fun of seeing a player. It could be positive. It could be negative, but seeing, you know, you mentioned Malachi Dupree and others, but it's like incoming freshman, you know, we get, you know, it's like the incoming rookie class. Like this year we're talking about, you know, this new wave of players entering college. And some of them are going to be more expensive next off season. Some of them are going to be equal. Some are going to be lower value. And it's an interesting process to watch as they go through. And some players are like, well, they're still really talented. Well, do we really expect him to start as a freshman or this year they didn't break out? It works just like NFL rookies, just in college, that I really enjoy the storyline aspect of players that are super cheap and all of a sudden become really expensive, whether it's warranted or not. And just that whole storyboard of player value there.
Absolutely. It's all good stuff. And again, the hit rate at each position varies. And just knowing that, hey, I'm not going to hit on every player. I can like all these players, but they're not all going to hit. And a hit is, there's several different definitions of that. If you draft them in the eighth round and you can trade them for a third rounder the very next year, and then they end up not hitting after that, well, you got out at the right time and that's all good. Or if you drafted them in round three or whatever, and then they end up round one NFL pick, that's a hit. Absolutely. Even if they, after he was a hit for those owners that had drafted him and Devy, because he ended up being the 101 that year as a rookie, but it still didn't insulate him from fizzling out when he made it to the NFL. So there's so many different variables. You just got to understand that and have fun with it. Not get too wrung over guys that you don't hit on. Not get, you know, just try to build your portfolio. Volume is the key. And just stay balanced, my friend.
Yep. And just like any other format, if you've never played, you know, auction startup draft or salary cap or IDP. I mean, you're going to take some lumps. Or when you were coming from redraft world and you play Dynasty for the first time, we all look back at a first startup draft or early moves or early leagues. And yeah, you're going to have a bunch of stuff that you want to take back, but that's part of the learning process. And frankly, it makes it when you've improved, when you've refined some of your skills and feel a lot more comfortable with whatever format it is, that it feels more rewarding, you know, that if you just started out and you're like, oh, well, this is easy, you know, that I'm hitting on every Devy pick and, you know, they're all great. It's just like, ah, where have I been my whole life, you know, sort of mentality. Again, that's typically not the path there. So just know that there's going to be a learning curve there, but the long-term reward is greater understanding for college players, more enjoyment, deeper player pool, more trade options. And I find, you know, trading in Devy leagues to be the easiest of any of the formats, even if you add, you know, to other ones too, tight end or super flex, deep roster, shallow roster, whatever. I find Devy just adding a whole new subset of players and picks, potential, all that makes trading, especially with teams in opposite directions, so much easier because it's not just picks. It's the college landscape added to that as well, and cashing in some of those players for current producers, whether it's in season or the off season. Wanted to thank Katie Flower for coming on the show. She's at FF_Skyler399 talking Devy. Little preamble introduction here to the topic. I think, you know, in the summer months, perfect time. Startup drafts are forming. Plenty out there with Devy, and you may have some pause. So we're talking through it in terms of the pros, maybe if it's for you, for not for you. And I think just experimentation is one of the watchwords here of just trying something new, because you don't know until you actually get into it. You have a full season and be like, ah, you know, I like these parts. I don't like these parts. And it's a good fit / not a good fit for me. And one more reminder, if you want to support the show, no advertising, patreon.com/UTH. Got Tim Torch doing a feature show with me. It's weekly in season about the waiver wire. We meander with voted on topics in the off season, also a VIP chat, strategy sessions, etc. Bonus content. So that's a way to give back. And if you don't want to hear about a bunch of products you hear on all the other podcasts, we keep this clean for Dynasty content. So for Katie Flyer, myself, Chad Parsons, until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.